You're listening to Guitar Radio Show, guitarradioshow.com.
Everybody, this is our very first time doing a live broadcast on Facebook from the Guitar Radio Show Facebook page. This will show up later on today on guitarradioshow.com in the form of a podcast, so you'll be able to hear it later if you haven't heard it now. And folks, if you want to just log in here, and you can go ahead and you can start adding comments and questions, and you can get in on this conversation. We've got with us today blues great Miss Kelly Ritchie from Cincinnati. How are you, Kelly?
I'm doing great. How are you doing? I'm sad today, though.
Yeah, same here. We're here to talk about all the folks that we've been losing as of late, and it's incredibly disturbing, to say the least. And we've got, formerly of Premier Guitar Magazine and now with Guitar Radio Show, writer and impresario, Mr. Adam P. Hunt. How are you, Adam?
I'm doing well, Mark. And as per promised, I tried to mitigate my coffee intake.
I appreciate that, but you never have to do that for me.
I doubled mine today, so don't worry, I'll make up for it.
All right, well, we're going to talk a little bit. Folks, if I look a little funny in the cans, just get used to it. Deal with it. This way I can hear everybody talk. So, we're all chatting privately with each other via Facebook, and the just disturbing. It's like this avalanche of talent that we're losing. It's really just kind of enormous. Earlier on, I posted a picture of a collage of just some of the people we've lost in 2016, and one that we actually lost at the very tail end of 2015, which is Lemmy from Motorhead. And I mean, it's just everywhere. It's been intense. And Adam, why don't you weigh in a little bit?
Sure. I think one of the reasons why everyone's feeling these losses so much is in part because that so many of the people were original. They were and they were authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they were, a second tier performer, or maybe somebody rode in the coattails of others, we wouldn't feel these losses as great.
Yeah, I hear you for sure. I mean, just a little bit of the list. I mean, obviously Prince and Lonnie Mack just the other day. Merle Haggard, Maurice White from Earth, Wind & Fire, Paul Kantner, Glenn Frey, David Bowie, Keith Emerson, and, of course, and Lemmy. I mean, it just seems to be adding on. And I realize now we're in a phase for those particular folk because of the age group that they're in and the age group that they had originally appealed to, that, their numbers are coming up. So to speak. And it's kind of like time marches on. But at the same time, I was having a conversation with my daughter this morning, and she was playing me some music. And I was like, well, that sounds like so-and-so, somebody that she listens to. And I was like, well, that sounds like another person. So I grabbed her phone and I said, here, listen to this. And I put in an artist, and she heard it. And she goes, oh, my God, that sounds just like this person that I listen to. And I'm like, yeah. And I think what's happening is, I think we're so impacted by this also. I think it makes it even more intense because there aren't any new movers and shakers. Everybody's kind of rehashing. You know what I mean? Callie, what do you think?
I think there's a lot of truth to that. I also think that just as Prince made the front page and Lonnie made the back page,
yeah,
I think that there's a lot of brilliant talent out there, that the industry, the way that things are set up, that it's not always you know, recognized or even on the radar.
Yeah.
So I have to believe that it's there, you know, if nothing else, for my own sanity.
Well, we got folks like you who are carrying the torch and you know, continue, and you're breaking new grounds with your latest record. I felt like you broke some new ground.
So, it felt that way, bringing in, you know, technology and not being afraid. And, you know, I found myself on stage with Albert King shortly before he died, and that's how I really discovered that all the music I love came from the blues. You know, I thought Zeppelin, you know, back, you know, I was, you know, pretty young person that kind of thought I knew everything at the time, only to be stopped dead in my tracks by what I learned from Albert. You know, that's when I discovered that Zeppelin didn't write the blues, you know, all that stuff. And then when I met Lonnie, he stopped me dead in my tracks by really, you know, challenging me to be my best. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sort of to have the opportunity to have been really exposed to somebody that looked through a lens that was original and that was cutting edge was, you know, a lens that not everybody gets to see through. And I'm really thankful that that was available.
Well, tell us a little bit more about your relationship with Lonnie Mack.
I was playing a MERF benefit. That's stands for Musicians Emergency Relief Fund. That Marvin Maxwell started in Louisville, Kentucky, shortly after he had recovered from a terrible accident, and he had a family, and so that was established to help people, you know, in that situation. And so I was playing one of their benefits, and Jim Rosen, who was a blues man, harmonica player, who died of cancer early in his life, in the late 1990s, introduced me to Lonnie. Mm-hmm. And Jim Rosen had always just been really rough with me, and, you know, you need to listen to this, you need to do that. And he introduced me to Lonnie and told Lonnie, he goes, you need to see this girl play. And so when I was on stage that night, it was before Lonnie's performance, I noticed he walked in the back of the room and he stayed all night and or stayed through our performance. And Jim came up to me and said, I want you to go to the bar and I want you to order a shot of Jameson and a Heineken and bring it over and set it down in front of Lonnie. I looked at him, he goes, just do it. And so I did. And that warmed Lonnie up to me real fast. And and he said, come here. And he whispered in my ear, he said, you're Stevie Ray in a woman's body. And I looked at him kind of shocked. I was like, whoa. You know, and at that time, I didn't realize that he had done Strikes Like Lightning and had Stevie Ray on it. I didn't know the story behind how Bruce Iglar turned down Stevie because Stevie was too rock. Mm-hmm. And Lonnie, who was about as stubborn could be and beat to his own drum, he pulled Stevie in on that record. And that's why, you know, both of them share, you know, that photo on that record, because he wanted Stevie to be heard. Mm-hmm. And Lonnie always talked to me like that. You know, he was just really straightforward. It's like, if you didn't want the truth, don't call Lonnie Mack. And, you know, I call him from time to time and ask him, you know, what do I do? Or, you know, this, you know, this is hard or that's hard. And, you know, one night, as I said in my blog post today, I got my phone rang about 3:30 in the morning, which I would usually answer, but I was that tired. Next morning, I checked my messages and it was Lonnie. He said, girl, you're out there doing it. He goes, you keep on going. And, you know, he was really special. And I think that we're lucky to have had him as long as we did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a bit of a tortured soul, like Roy Buchanan was, who was, you know, my favorite guitarist to ever live. He caught my attention early on in my career and really helped me form my chops. So, you know, we've lost so many of the greats, not just in general as far as icons, but, you know, those people that were the real forefathers of, you know, where people like Prince came from, you know, and got their chops. So, you know, I'm thankful that I knew Lonnie and that I got some direct advice from him, because the impact of his words left their fingerprint on me.
Yeah. Wow. And you had, before it had been confirmed, you actually messaged me and said, I got a bad feeling.
Yeah, I started getting phone calls and texts last night saying, man, Lonnie died. I'm like, really? And I, Marvin Maxwell that I mentioned that started the Musicians Relief Fund in Louisville, he used to play with Lonnie. And so I messaged Marvin. I said, is this true? And he said, unfortunately so. He said, Lonnie had a stroke on Wednesday and was taken to the hospital, and they took him off life support on Thursday.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So had he been sick for a while, or?
He had been.
You there, Kelly? Did we lose Kelly?
I think so. We'll have to keep things rolling until.
Yeah. Let's see here. It's. Yeah, we got disconnected. All right, Adam. Why don't you weigh in a little bit on what you think?
Well, I know what Kelly was talking about, particularly with Roy Buchanan. And a couple of years ago, I talked with Roger and Chrissy Fritz, because Roger Fritz owns Six Brothers Guitars up in Mendocino.
Right.
And he eventually developed the Roy Buchanan model for guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, anytime I talk to
the person whom you're trying to reach is
to either Roger or to Chrissy, they both express the what Kelly was talking about Lonnie, and that when he was a very troubled individual, and that you know, when he was not on the sauce, he was great and warm and funny and gregarious, and when he hit the juice, he was an entirely different person. But, what I think you and I were chatting about, you know, either last night or this morning about Lonnie, of course, and of course, it goes without saying with David Bowie and with Prince, is that all these guys were multifaceted in terms of their output.
Yeah.
They just didn't stick to one genre.
Oh, for sure.
They were always them when they performed.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, they weren't like, you know, Johnny Ramone, who essentially played one song over and over again. Not to diss Johnny, but you know, he was great for what he did.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree with you. Oh, she's trying to reach us back here. Here we go.
Okay.
Kelly, there?
Yes, I am. I have a gentleman working on my house, and one room has no electricity for some reason. I don't know what's going on, and so my computer, my laptop died, and I'm back in another part of the room. So sorry about that.
That's okay. So we were just saying, and Adam was putting out there pretty succinctly that that, you know, Lonnie, like Prince and like Bowie, were not these one-dimensional characters, you know.
No.
I mean, you know, it's so funny that Lonnie kind of gets, it's funny because Lonnie kind of gets pigeonholed as a blues guitarist, but he was much more than that.
Yeah, he was, and he played bass on, what was it, Roadhouse Blues for the Doors? He was out in L.A. during, you know, the whole 60s thing.
Yeah, for sure. And actually, Adam had turned me on to that this morning. I had no idea. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Lonnie told me a bunch of stuff. He has an archive of footage with Stevie Ray that he would talk about from time to time. I don't know where that is or if that will surface.
Yeah.
I don't know, but he was an interesting character, and he did what he wanted. And he really wasn't. He lived down in Tennessee, and he just wanted to go fishing.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I know that they did a couple of tracks together. They did Oreo Cookie Blues. They did that. Him and Stevie. But yeah, I mean, I'm wondering what's going to surface now. I mean, you know, the same thing with Prince. You know, I mean, I've heard over the years that there's a full blues album, and then there's a jazz record, and there's a fusion record, an all instrumental guitar record.
Oh, wow!
You know, I mean, all this music. I mean, from what people say, there's years of music, much in the same way that the Hendrix estate has always something that's they're unearthing, or Tupac Shakur, for that matter, who I'm not entirely sure isn't dead.
You know, with Prince, you know, I love all the stuff that he did, but I always longed to hear more guitar. And this morning I was watching While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Yeah.
I'd only seen clips. I hadn't seen that whole thing. I knew it was good, and I wanted to give it the time and respect to watch it. And I just never had, and I had that on this morning. I'm like, holy crap. Mm-hmm. And so I did a blog post and talked about that this morning because, you know, I always wanted to hear more guitar, and boy, there it was.
Yeah, for sure. And here's a question for both of you. If you've both seen the video, Adam, you've seen the video?
The performance that Kelly was talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I have a question to ask you. At the end, when they're holding the last note and they hit that last chord,
where did his guitar go?
Where the hell did it go?
I think it was that big man in the front that caught him. You know, when he I thought, man, am I seeing something there? And I watched it again. It's like, where'd it go?
Yeah.
You know what my theory is?
What's that?
It fell down and hit Chris Novoselic in the head.
Wouldn't have been the first time that happened to him. That's great. That's so funny. Folks are starting to tune in now, and folks, if you want, please you can comment, ask questions, and get involved in this conversation. We're going to be on for just a couple more minutes, and if you can, by all means. We heard from Lou Ramondelli here. He says, "What about Keith Richards? Isn't he dead?" Oh, he isn't. Never mind.
Walking.
So yeah, it's so funny. It's so funny every time. Every time that somebody like this unfortunately passes away, somebody inevitably puts up the meme, you know, of Keith going, "Wow, I outlived this one too." It's
he's going to be the last man standing.
Somebody said that every time that another musician dies, Keith Richards experiences the quickening. So, I'm really in a weird place because, you know, I really got affected by these two particular losses. It was just like when BB passed away. When you lose somebody who is essentially the tapestry, or the tapestry and the soundtrack of your life, of your formative years and your adult years, it's jarring, you know. And these two particular people, in particular, were that, you know, Prince, because I love funk and I love what he did, but he was so much more than that. And as I got older, I started to learn that he really was so much more than that.
It was like Jimi Hendrix. I mean, he did things that hadn't been done, and it's one thing to be brilliant, and it's another thing to do things that haven't been done.
Yeah, he was an innovator, and it was interesting too because he was a bit of a Renaissance man in the sense that he, you know, he was involved in the arts, he was involved in music, he was a producer, he was a writer, he was an amazing guitar, a multi-instrumentalist, and you know, and who knows what was to come? I mean, you know, it's really amazing.
Did you ever see him live?
No, I never did.
I got to see the Purple Rain tour, and
oh, wow.
That was just kind of like in slow motion. It was so surreal. Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, I still see clips of it playing back in my head. It was just, it was unreal.
Yeah.
And so I was watching the crowd. Was as much a part of it as watching him.
Yeah.
Everyone was just kind of like, what's happening? You know? Remember the footage of Jimi Hendrix, and it pans to Mama Cass in the audience, and you just see her face of like, what is that?
Yeah, what's happening?
It was that same kind of thing, you know.
It's one of those like, uh-oh, things are changing.
Yeah, like, what is this? An alien?
Yeah, really, absolutely. Yeah. I got to see Lonnie play when I was in New York, and that was pretty amazing. He was He was incredible. You know, it's interesting. You know how some blues cats can be and can be kind of real smooth, you know, and they're always smooth. I mean, Lonnie, he could be smooth, but he was gritty as hell. Like much in the same way you are.
Yeah, he really had an attack, and then he could do a song like Tough on Me, Tough on You.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah, I mean, it was funny. I was talking to an older gentleman yesterday who remembers when Memphis, when he did Memphis, was a top 40 single. And he said that he actually had it on a 45. And
you know, I live in Cincinnati, so Cincinnati jail.
Yeah. For sure. What are your recollections of Lonnie, Adam?
I always heard him in conjunction with some of the earlier rock and roll instrumentalists.
Yeah.
Say, like Chet Atkins, and of course Duane Eddy.
Yeah.
And to find out, of course, there was all these different aspects to his performance and his long career. You know, I was more surprised than how little I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if I could turn back the conversation a little bit earlier, it was, you know, I said Mark something yet last night about Prince. It was a pretty long video from Vernon Reid. Mm-hmm. Talking about all the work that Prince had been doing, and same thing with Van Johnson. Mm-hmm. All the charitable work he was involved in. But you know, prior to Buff Luddy and Prince passing on, I was had some exchanges on with Vernon on Twitter concerning the plight that not only all musicians face, but we all face, is of course the access to health care and access to mental health issues, because we know that there's been a lot of as much as we love music, there's a lot of troubled people who are involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that can have a consequence if you are trying to self-medicate. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to have access to those facilities, you know? And that's one of the things that made Howlin' Wolf so unique was, of course, he insisted that all his backing musicians would carry health insurance with them. And he did a lot to make sure they did. Stop drinking, stop gambling, stop chasing women, and save your money, because you're going to need it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's one of the areas, I mean, in the arts that is woefully unprepared for the inevitable. And how that can be addressed in the future is really a good question. I mean, you know, Kelly, you're a full-time musician. You know,
yes.
you're out on the road many times, close to 250 days a year, and then on top of that, you're recording, you're writing, you're teaching, you're doing online lessons, you're working with True Fire. I mean, you're doing all these things, and how do you prepare for the future? It's different for folks like, Adam and I, who are musicians, but we've also got our desk jobs here in the studio. So how do you prepare for this?
I got sober 6.5 years ago, and it was, I could tell that I was reaching that fork in the road.
Yeah.
And if I didn't, there, I would start to lose my health. And, you know, I've watched a lot of people suffer.
Yeah.
With a lot of things, and it goes unnoticed. And you know, most people just self-medicate, and then, you know, you kind of pass at a gig and go on. And that's tragic. You know, I took 2010 off.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave myself the opportunity to decide whether I wanted to continue in music. And I didn't miss it even a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I had gotten so burned out. I knew that I would never lose my relationship with my guitar. But, you know, doing as many shows as I had done was really insane. But it's what it took. to stay alive.
Right.
And, you know, everybody says to you, oh, my God, you're so lucky you get to do what you love, you know, and you just kind of stand there and it's kind of like you have no idea, you know, how depressed I am.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, traveling with the circus. So, you know, I think it's really important. I think just as important of a role that is played is the people in the audience. And I don't think the people in the audience are aware of what musicians go through.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say, oh, poor me. But you know, they only see the good side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seldom is the real side told. And I do, when I got off the road for just about 9-10 months, well, it was a year when I stepped away from gigs, but I had to put my band back together to get started again because of some shifts in my life, which I think really helped to call me back to what it was that I was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And as I stepped back into it, I started doing just 100 shows a year.
Right.
And I was careful about how I integrated back in, and I started balancing things out with guitar lessons. And I'd also started in 2008 to become a life coach because I'd taught so much.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that many of my guitar students, they weren't practicing. They were coming to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of life experience. I'm definitely not, you know, a psychologist or anything. I'm not trained, but I'm trained in life.
Mm-hmm.
And in my interaction with people, I felt that it was important to try to play some kind of a role. I quickly found that in trying to save the world, it would have been easier than saving myself. And that's what led me to sobriety.
Right.
And, you know, I do school programs and I am a facilitator for Women Writing for Change. I really want to help bring health and stability to people by helping them find their voice,
mm-hmm.
not by teaching them what it is that I think they need to say or discover, but, you know, helping to facilitate people find that within themselves.
Right.
Because I think when we're heard, and I think as an artist, we want to be heard so bad, whatever that wound is, that will do anything, you know, and sometimes the not being heard is what drives people to those things. And so, you know, for the audience to be able to maybe engage a little bit more with artists and maybe look a little bit deeper into what they're going through,
mm-hmm.
And make some empathy visible to mm-hmm. some artists,
mm-hmm.
I think that can be helpful. And I think we need to look for ways to promote that and to draw those connections.
No, I agree with you. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's I guess it really is more about having a plan than anything else for working musicians out there. And I think that's really important.
But I had some good support around me. Not everybody has that.
Yeah,
you know?
That's
and I've
true.
Been raised by parents that made sure I knew mm-hmm. right from wrong and held me accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that you always pull that off, but I at least knew what it was.
Yeah.
You know, and not everybody has that support. And so they, you know, when you see that somebody's seeking that, and if there's anything you can do to help, I think it's important to not let that pass. Because
yeah.
I've had several friends that didn't make it that I got the call the next day, and
mm-hmm.
they'd ended their lives. And
mm-hmm.
both of them were musicians.
Yeah,
so,
for sure. For sure. Absolutely. Well, we heard from Lou again. Lou Romandelli, he said, look, I look on the bright side. If you believe and there is in a hereafter, we will all experience one hell of a jam when we leave this place. Remember, life is only temporary. Yeah, for sure. But at the same time, while we're here, while we're waiting to get our tickets to the jam, it can be a bit of a bummer sometimes.
Hoping we get in, you know.
Yeah, really. I mean, I know it's going to be standing room only, but hey. You know,
I have a feeling I'll wind up like Paul McCartney at that after hour party a little while ago when he wasn't gate listed.
That'll be you.
That'll be me.
Wow. Yeah, I hear you. Well, you know, yeah, he says here, only if you let it be a bummer. It's true. You're right, Lou. You're right. I'm giving you a thumbs up here on this. You're right, dude. You know, it's I guess there's a little bit of selfishness attached to how I'm feeling in that, you know, these people are there and their music and their talent is such a part of my everyday my everyday habits and life. I mean, I music is like food. It's like air. It's like water for me. So, you know, it's crazy because the day before Prince passed, I was listening to Musicology, which is a fantastic record. And it's an interesting little time capsule of music in that it was right during the beginning of the Gulf War, and things were really heating up, and it was really starting to get ugly. And so there's some commentary in there on a song called Dear Mr. Man. It was basically an open letter to the establishment. And it's, you know, and one of the things that I really loved about his work was that he could do more with five notes than most people could do with a flurry of notes.
Yeah.
And all the dressing that he did around those five notes. I mean, all he had to do was play those five notes. There was no need for a bridge or a chorus. It was all there, you know. What did you think of his song structure, Adam?
It's really clear that he really thought about the entire thing. And I know, of course, when he did a couple albums that really caught people off guard, had a bit more of a psychedelic flair to them, you know, there's a lot of tongue clicking about it. It's like, oh, what's he doing? Why is he going the psychedelic direction? It's like, why shouldn't he?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I dug it.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. That was one of the things. He was a kind of, he played by his rules and nobody else's. And that was just, and I kind of got the same impression from Lonnie as well. Would you say that, Kelly?
Yes. I mean, you know, not to be rude at all, but I mean, in context, I think that's an understatement, because he was, you know, just, he was so gonna do it his way. And, you know, kind of be damned. You know, and one thing that I see in both of these artists is that gospel structure that they brought to the table, you know. And, you know, in gospel music, you can just stand there and sway and hum, and that's enough.
Yeah.
You know, so having just those five notes, it's like if you had a combination lock with just five digits, you know, I doubt that I'd get it solved in my lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, so never underestimate the power of simplicity when emotion is involved. You know, when I'm teaching, I always, you know, tell my students, it's like, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but this is all I do is use these five notes, you know, and I throw a couple of notes in to embellish it, you know. But it really is about those five notes when it comes to blues, rock, you know, any kind of pop music that's going to come from that vein. You know, and the fact that Prince did psychedelic, it's like, of course he did. You know, I mean, that's the most, I think, free form of expression when it comes to rock, you know, blues rock music. You know, where else can you take it but out there? And who's going to define what that is, you know?
Yeah. No, you're right. You're absolutely, you know, and touching on something that you said earlier, and I want you both to weigh in on this, touching in on something you said earlier in regards that you feel firmly and you have that hope inside you that there are new innovators out there. They're out there, and they just haven't been heard. And I have to agree with you. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's people like Marcus King, you know, people like that, who aren't being heard. And I think, and this is my, and I'm calling out, you know, some of the publications and larger media venues that won't play those people because they're always playing it safe to sell a magazine or to sell airtime or whatever. That if they don't start having the foresight of breaking new artists, innovative artists, artists that are going to take the music further and get the listener to start thinking like these musicians did in the past, like your Hendrix, you know, your Jeff Becks, your Robin Trowers, even, you know, if you don't get that happening soon, what's going to happen is you're just going to continue this treadmill of putting out the same old thing over and over again. And I think that people, you know, if people don't get a new diet of something to taste and something to enrich their palate, we're not going to get these artists. Guys?
Who wants to I think that, like we once had the dumbing down of America in the media.
Yeah.
You know, if we're, I want to say if we're not careful, we're not careful. You know, it's all about the dollar, from politics to music, you know, to everything. And it was people like Prince that and Jimi Hendrix that keep music relevant, that keep it alive. And the very fact that, you know, if a artist speaks out with a political view that they don't have a right to, it's like, you know, what the hell is that all about?
Mm-hmm.
That's insulting as a listener.
Mm-hmm.
And as an artist, and one other thing I'll say, being a female, I don't know how many festivals that I've called, oh, we've already got a girl on the bill.
No.
Yes. And I'm like, seriously? You had the nerve to say that?
I can't wrap my head around that.
I can't either. You know, I just laugh. They either have like a women's night exclusively.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, we're going to let you girls in. Or, we've already got one girl on the bill. We can't have two. And it's just like, man, you know, you can't make that stuff up. You know, mm-hmm. I've long since, I don't get offended by it. I just have to laugh because it's ridiculous, you know. And the only thing you can do, like when I first started playing, girls didn't play. And that's the first thing my teacher told me is, Kelly, girls can't play guitar. And, you know, at that time, I couldn't prove him wrong. It's not like I had anybody to reference, you know. And he also had my number and wanted to toughen me up because that's what he knew it was going to take if I was serious at all.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Adam?
Well, I was thinking about several different things. One is, of course, a real need for artist development. And I think the BBC does a really, really good job with that. The BBC pumps literally millions of dollars per year into artist development. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of programs which set up live venues for up-and-coming talent and organize tours and give them recording contracts and put them on the air because they understand the value of that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, too, is, and I know you're talking about the challenges that, you know, women have as performers. I was watching an interesting documentary yesterday. It was on Wendy O. Williams.
Oh, yeah.
And just the shitstorm she had to put up
with. Yeah.
I love her when she drove the school bus through the wall of televisions.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she and Ari Gop and Guy Boucher and Eve Libertine all mm-hmm. took a rash.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I have a little story about her. I auditioned for her band. From the Wow album. Remember the Wendy O. Williams album, that first solo.
Wow, man, that's crazy.
Yeah, I was out there. I had a demo tape, and I was passing it around to everybody. And I met her at a record signing for the Coup d'Etat album, the Plasmatics record. And I gave it to her, and I just gave it. I was giving it to everybody. And when the Wendy O. Williams thing came around, I got a phone call, and I went in and I did it, but I wasn't heavy enough. I just wasn't heavy enough. But it was cool that I got to, you know, that I got to go and do that. That was a real, real experience, actually.
Well, at least you had the hair at the time.
What's that, Adam?
At least you had the hair at the time.
I did. I had the hair at the time. I had a nice head of hair then. Well, we're gonna sign off here. But Adam, do you have any closing statements you'd like to make?
Nothing which is publishable.
Okay. And what about you, Kelly?
Thanks for having me on and for honoring Lonnie, you know, because I, you know, Prince definitely deserves honor. But, you know, Lonnie died in the shadows. And so I just think it's really cool that you're doing this. And thanks for including me. I appreciate it a lot.
My pleasure. And thanks for reaching out to me and sharing your stories with us. We appreciate it. Kelly, you got a new record out right now, right?
Yeah, Shakedown Soul, and it's kind of about what we're talking about, you know. It's about reality of what it all is, and there's a song on there called "The Artist," and the full title is "The Artist in Me is Choking," you know, and it talks about these things.
And folks can get it on iTunes. They can go to KellyRitchie.com, and they can get it there too, right?
Yeah.
All right, cool. And folks, you can check out Adam's Tasteful Writing here every other Thursday on guitarradioshow.com. And anything else you want to promote there, Adam? Your drinking habits, anything like that? Okay. Folks, we're hoping, Adam and I are actually hoping to be at the NAMM show in July. If we're not there, we'll definitely be at the January NAMM show. So when you see my bald head and Adam's incredible height, you'll be able to pick us out in a crowd easily and come over and say hello. Thanks for everybody who tuned in. Thank you both for being on. I greatly appreciate it. Like I said, later on today, this will be on guitarradioshow.com as a podcast. So it'll be on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podbay, Podomatic, Player FM, and all those other great places that it goes all over the world. We are all lovers of music and sound, and we're always, you know, Tom Waits put it best. He goes, "Music is something interesting to do with the air." And I always thought that was a great way of putting it. And we love it. And that's why we're so passionate about it. And we know that you are as well. And we wish you all the best. And we wish the families of all those who have passed recently that they weather the storm. And we send out much love and gratitude. Thanks, guys. Hold on one second, but we're going to sign off here on Facebook, and we'll see y'all soon. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of Guitar Radio Show is brought to you in part by
more mids, more growl, more bite, Nico's USA Hot 60s Tele Pickups. Only from Nico's USA. Go to nicosusapickups.com.
New episodes of Guitar Radio Show air every Wednesday on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podbay, Player FM, Podomatic, and of course on guitarradioshow.com. Check out Guitar Radio Show on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Instagram, and Tumblr, and of course on guitarradioshow.com.